Blog Talk Radio.
Pennsylvania. When you purchase their water, you log on to BradfordWhite.com. Tampa Bay Golf and Country Club will hopefully be up there this week after the Rays are out of town for 10 days. Give Tim Baker a call, 352-588-5454. The Abbey Corsi Leo's University, give them a call, 352-588-2016. Gentlemen, I've seen some, I'd like to welcome our Orlando legend, Mr. Roger Henner, Frank Carroll. Gentlemen, I've seen some history at Tropicana Field. David Price, five consecutive strikeout games. He overtook that that's a Rays record for the month of June. He overtook Santana's record for the most consecutive games in a strikeout. And here's a chance with David at the Price said right after the game, guys.
Oh, I didn't notice that. So no, it didn't feel weird. David took the isolation.
There you have it, Roger and Frank. It might be his last game for David Price. I hope not. Guys, welcome aboard. Another Wednesday night. Fun of games out here tonight.
Yeah, Tommy.
Absolutely.
The one thing that David did say at during that conference was that this is the first time he's felt in total control of his game, not in high school, college, or in 2012. Ever pitched as well, and you got to give the guy a lot of credit. That's his fifth 11 strikeout game,
right?
And as you said, he did take the record for the club.
Exactly, and the way David performed today, it's like the David Price we all know today. The Rays on this long homestand. It was a tough homestand. Pittsburgh comes in, St. Louis. You had Baltimore and Houston out there. They're all good young teams, but Roger and Frank, this Houston, this Pittsburgh team has impressed me. Lawrence McCutchen is a great player, best player in the National League. I had a chance to talk with him and Quinn Hurdle, manager of the year. This Pittsburgh team, they're 500 right now, but they're going to get it going real shortly.
Well, they started a couple of years ago. They built the farm system up. They've made some good moves. I don't know whether Lawrence McCutchen is the best player in the National League, but, he's probably, in the top five or so. Tommy, I do have a question about Price, though.
Yes.
What's the over and under that he's going to be gone to another team shortly?
I think right now what they're talking right now is probably by the trade deadline, the rumors have it he might be going to St. Louis or maybe Cleveland or one of the teams over there. I think St. Louis would be the best bet. Then they want to throw in Ben Zobrist on that deal too. So the Rays, I hope they don't trade David or Ben because those two quality guys in their clubhouse and they're good people overall up there or not. But we all know what the Rays payroll is going to be. They're off to a very tough start. But Joe said 50-50. Now they get a road trip, but consists of Baltimore, a day and night game over the weekend. Then they play the Yankees, and they go to Detroit. So it doesn't get any easier over the 4th of July holiday for the Tampa Bay Rays. But you got to believe in Joe. Joe's been there before. He's been in baseball all those years, and I still believe in my manager, Joe Maddon.
Well, Tommy, Arizona's the only one that's actually already gone all out on the table. They've already said that they're ready to trade anybody except their number one player.
Yes. We're going to walk into the program, Don Henderson. Don, you got great weather up there in Philadelphia. You got the game on in the Phillies, and there's no seats. There's a bunch of empty seats in Philadelphia right now.
Well, I'll tell you, Roger can tell you more about that than I can because, unfortunately, on our system here, we're blocked out from Comcast in Philadelphia.
Oh, no.
So we can't get – unless it's on MLG – we can't get it, but you're right. It's been that way for quite some time in the game that I've seen. But Roger, that's pretty much a standard case now, isn't it?
It is. I'll tell you, Don. If they get over 30, considered an accomplishment. And excuse me. It's been interesting. Even when they were doing better, they did have a lot of promotions. And I was listening to watching the Cardinals over the weekend, and I went back and forth to the Cardinals, and they pack it almost every night. I mean, good, great crowd.
Mm.
And I think they're one of the best teams in baseball and one of the best systems. I mean, they just fill in whatever is needed. But they have so many promotions, giveaways. And as you and I know, Don, for many years, the only time you had a Phillies giveaway was on Sunday.
Yes, I remember
that.
Yeah,
that's exactly right, and you're also right about the Cardinals. If there's a better organization in baseball, I'd like to see who it is because constantly they make the right move. I mean, every time you look up and they let somebody that they think is invaluable go, he winds up doing less for the team they trade him to, and they wind up with better players coming along from the system.
Yes, exactly. Look at
Oh, exactly.
Albert
great.
Good example.
Oh,
right.
Great,
exactly.
That's a great point. I'm watching this Phillies game. I'm like saying, where are all the seats up there? Like the, where are all the people out there? They're not going to short until Friday night. The NHL draft's going to be in Philadelphia, and a couple of guys from our staff are going to see the Phillies game up there and that tonight. So they're going to sit back here and watch the Phillies game up there, and they. In great weather, it's 86 degrees in Philadelphia right now. Like it's a humidity's low. Great night for a ball game. But where's everybody?
Oh, terrific night for a ball game. No question about it. But unfortunately, when you're resting comfortably at the bottom of the National League East, I mean, not that there's a big differential. I mean, you talk about Washington on top and the Phillies on the bottom, and only really a six and a half game spread.
Right.
Not very much. But at the same time, the Phillies have consistently been unimpressive.
Oh,
right.
It's
they
just
can't hit, or they don't hit. Let's put it that way.
Wow, this is very shocking. I saw the one game that when the Phillies played I get to see when they play the Marlins when they hit the ball pretty good against the Marlins up there. It's the same thing like the Rays up there. Situation hitting, You know, Guy, Don, and Roger and Frank, the guy disappointing me this year, you know, Escobar. I mean, last night's game, the ball was hit right to the guy. You know, he didn't charge the ball. He just fielded it, and that's about it. He didn't run out of ground out in Houston up there. Now, Ben Zobrist is playing great shortstop right now. I don't think it could be, you know, might be tired or sore or whatever, but he's really disappointing me at shortstop this year.
Tommy, there are so many teams right now that are playing very, very poor defense. I mean, if you watch games in and out like I do almost every night,
right,
and you see the caliber of competition and what they do, I mean, it's really remarkable. Errors that you wouldn't see, you know, 10, 15 years ago in a million years, you see on an every night basis. And when you talk about crowds, we talked about it before, you've got to win. Even the Yankees, and they're not that far behind. They're like third place, two games back. But you can walk into Yankee Stadium any time. Now, they had a great crowd for Old Timers Day. They sold out on Sunday. They sold out, almost sold out, on Saturday for Tino Day. But for the most part, if you watch a Yankee game on television, you see a heck of a lot of empty seats.
Yes. Guys like to walk them to,
you know,
the winning, like to walk the winning coat.
I just want to say, you know, to follow up on the defense, you hit a real great point, because the other night, Chase Utley made two errors. I believe three in the game, but I think two in the same inning.
Wow.
Well, Jeter made two last night. I've watched Jeter now for 20 years. I've never seen him make the kinds of plays he made last night, and it cost the Yankees three runs in one inning. I think it was the seventh, if I'm not mistaken. Ground ball to short, relatively easy play. Just scoop it up, throw it over to first. He looked at second. They were late coming. They had a hit and run going. They were late going. He would be late going to second base. He looked at third and thought maybe the runner was going to round third. He threw the ball to first, and obviously he was too late there. So there was no error, but the bases were loaded. And then right after that, he got a runner going from first to second in a rundown, and he decided to outrun him and tag him, and the player got back to first base. Again, there's no error, but when do you ever see Jeter make two plays like that in his whole career?
Never,
right.
Never, Don. I'd like to welcome in the next guest, the winningest coach of the Arena Football League, good friend of mine, good friend of the program, Coach Lawrence Samuels. Lawrence, I love your arm at practice today. I couldn't throw the ball that far through that net.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good.
We're doing great, but
Lawrence,
I don't want Tommy to misrepresent. It seems to me that there's a team in Cleveland that has a couple of more wins than a Storm, and I know you're going to come right up against them. But so the winningest coach may be in Cleveland still.
No.
Lawrence, I'm going to cut his mic off.
Well, Laura, I should say the back nine. That's what I'm going to say, the back nine, Lawrence. That's what I'm going to say, the
we
back
nine. We just don't
want
to mislead the audience. That's all, Tommy.
Right.
Don, it's coming from my heart. You know that, Lawrence. It's coming from my heart, you know. Lawrence knows that. It's coming from my heart, you know. So it's been
Let's talk about this game against Cleveland, because they are the number one team right now. And Lawrence, how's practice going this week, and what do you look forward to?
Well, we had a great week of practice. The guys are very upbeat, and everything is laid out right there in front of us. You know, Cleveland has been good all year long, and there's one thing that they have done is that they have won games late. What I mean late is that it's the Hail Mary has been very fortunate for them. Four late game drives, and the game they won against Philly the first time, down 17 with 1 minute left to go in the game, and they come back and win it at the end of the day.
Wow.
Damn.
And then this past game that they played against Philly, Hail Mary, 47 yards, hit ball, they scored. So, I told my team to come down to the last play of the game because they've been capitalized on it all year.
And I think the game, you know, against Orlando, Frank and I know that was one of the best arena football games defensively. We won by a point, and it's just any time you beat Orlando Lawrence, it's a feather to Storm's hat. That was such a great football game last Saturday night.
Oh, yeah, it was a great game, and the guys played great. We had, some things that we needed to work on, and we got those things corrected this week in practice on the offensive side. But as long as our defense is playing lights out like that, we'll find a way to win the game.
And you,
Lawrence,
you face,
do you feel the team is peaking now at the right time?
Oh, this is about the best time for any team to start peaking and start getting things in order. Every game is a playoff game for us. That's the way we feel. The guys that are competing, they're doing all the little things, and they're learning how to handle adversity at the right time. So this is a great time for us to actually be on a win streak and going up against a great and a good, very good Cleveland team.
Tommy, you talked about the week before and the great crowd support. How was it this week?
Oh, our crowd has been behind us all year long, and they've done a great job sticking behind us. There was great energy in the building. It's good to see the rivalry feeling with the game, with the Orlando and the Storm game. I feel like that feeling was coming back. And it's going to be a challenge this week. Cleveland draws a pretty good crowd. They've been winning, been winning week in, week out every week this year, and very explosive team. But I think our guys are talent. We'll go in and we'll compete and do a great job.
Lawrence, the play of James Harrell, especially that defensive, our defensive backs have been terrific the last several games. That's a great key, and Coach Hovind's done such a great job of coaching them, and the coaching staff and the defensive tire has been fantastic.
Right. James Harrell has been one guy that's a real standout for us. He's done a great job. Every week he's coming up with big defensive plays. And he did a great job last week. Those guys played very well together, Rod Isaac, Dean Fedor, and Darius Payne. They're doing great for us, and they complement our defense very well.
What can you say about Randy Zefford once again? I mean, came back in the clutch. I think he should be AFL player of the week every week. But he's been coming out of the clutch up. He's been playing great for us.
Yeah, he's just making plays. The guys are really rallied behind him. He's mature. He's our leader on the offense. And he's doing all the right things. He pulled that ball down and ran it at the right time. He's just been a phenomenal job this past week. Just managing the offense. Some of the things that we want to get better this week, what we worked on this week, was going in the red zone. We were doing well this year scoring in the red zone, and we kind of had a roadblock last week. So we worked on that. We're going to go up to Cleveland and correct those mistakes. Come home victorious.
Coach, we have a new edition, a weekly edition of Can We Stump the Coach? We have our Mr. Carr. Mr. Carr, can you sign in?
Yes, sir. Hey, Coach, how you doing?
Say that again.
He's asking, how you doing?
I think you stumped him.
Yeah, we Uh-oh. May have.
No, I don't think you? I have. Coach, 328.
It's good.
Okay. You want to try again there, Mr. Caller? Give him another.
Caller,
Coach Samuels threw a game-time touchdown against Orlando back in the day on a triple post.
Hey.
You guessed her. Shane, welcome aboard, sir. How you doing tonight, Shane?
I'm doing well.
welcome to Wednesday Night Fun Time on the radio.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be on here with Coach Samuel.
Oh,
well, I say we have a lot of fun with Coach every week, and he's on a little bit of a run right now, and all you can do is hope it just keeps on going, especially this weekend.
Absolutely. Hey, good luck, Coach, man. I hope, wish you the best, and hope you guys come back with a win. So next week, going into that bye weekend with you know, some positive thoughts and continue to ride this train.
Yeah, the train's been doing a phenomenal job coming out with us. He's helping the quarterback get on track. And every week we're improving every week. So just hats off to James, his effort that he's been helping us out throughout the week.
I know. See, Shane, how's your golf game going? Hopefully, to go play. Me and Lawrence go play in the bye week.
Yeah. I'm down with it. You know, as long as we get out in the morning.
Sure.
If we don't have anything there with the storm, I'm ready to roll. You know, it's getting better, I think.
Good.
Probably not.
I'm still dribbling down the fairway, right, Lawrence?
That's right. You gotta watch out for him, man.
I know. He says he's dribbling down it. Meanwhile, he's in the 9-iron, like 180, spot on.
No.
The truth comes out.
Yeah.
No. Uh-oh. I'm gonna be good, right, guys? I'm gonna be good down the fairway. Oh yeah. We'll definitely have to get out, Shane. You know, like during next week, and then, Coach, we have to get out too next week too. During the bye week, the first business comes first. Go to Cleveland. Beat Cleveland. Just keep it going. I want to sing a song to you. Ain't no stopping us now, guys.
Right.
Move.
Right.
I'm so amazed.
Yeah, how's the health, Coach? Everybody healthy?
Yeah, we're doing just fine. We're rolling right along. We're going to keep the same lineup as we've been doing these last 5 weeks. And, I think the group has really solidified themselves and become very cohesive group. They're playing for one another. I can't ask for more at this time of the year.
Great.
That's going to be great up there. Go up to my old neck of the woods, Lawrence, and come home with a W. That's be wonderful up there and that. So you should be
good.
You
ought to get on that plane and go up there with him.
I said that to Ben. It came up so quick. I should have had that ahead of time. But Lawrence, for next year we go to Cleveland. They want me on the trip going to Cleveland up there and that. So be.
Hey Don, when Tommy opened up his wallet to pay for the tickets, the Martin flew out.
Right. That's right.
Tommy, let me ask you a question. Maybe the coach can answer too. How long has the schedule been out that this came up on you so quickly?
Don, you stumped me there, sir.
Hey, Tommy and Frank and Coach, I just wanted to say, we love the AFL and we like to promote it. And on Monday night in Philadelphia at the Soul Game, for all our fans in Philadelphia, they're going to have a touch football game between the media and the stars, you know, personalities.
Oh,
and Ron Jaworski's going to coach one team. And the referee is a guy that I know many of us are familiar with from his days in the NFL, Bob McAlee.
Oh, wow.
Legendary NFL ref. And South Al Antonio and a cast of many names that we're familiar with are all going to be playing in that game. And it's a benefit to go to one of the Wounded Warrior programs.
Aww.
Programs. So
aww,
we encourage everybody to open at 5:30, and the game, touch game, is at 6 o'clock, followed by the Seoul Arena League game.
Oh. Is Howard Eskin playing in that?
This is Shane, real quick. I grew up in the Pennsylvania area, about an hour outside of Philadelphia, and I know how much that means to that city that they recognize those people. So that's awesome.
That's great.
Yeah, Shane, where did you grow up? Whereabouts?
Reading, Pennsylvania. About 45 minutes to an hour.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you and Ross Tucker, that played the NFL.
Absolutely. Ross, he still thinks his high school is better than mine, but we dominated.
Hey, listen, the Reading Phillies were there forever. You got to know a lot about
right.
the Phillies,
right.
too.
No doubt about
right.
it. Absolutely. They have a new stadium that was built a couple of years ago.
Really?
Yeah, right.
One of the best minor league stadiums in the country.
Wow.
It is. Where did you go to college, Shane?
University of Connecticut.
Okay,
in Connecticut.
UConn.
Okay.
That's
okay,
right.
great.
You
know, there was another great coach, legendary coach, that Todd and I know very well. Bob Cassiola was a coach at UConn at one time.
That was before my time.
Oh, I know it was.
Yeah. These guys are older than dirt. The dirt wasn't dry when they were born.
Yeah.
So I feel like right now, guys, older than dirt probably. Yeah.
Hey, Law Dog, I can't say what we said on the field today about TT, right?
When you played up in Connecticut, coach, did they have grass on the field or was it just dirt?
There was some, you know, for the lines, what we did was we just, you know, we made tire marks.
Oh, no.
Shane, I'll tell you a quick story that many of us are familiar with. I know Don and I are. Of course, you know, Gina Wariana, of course, you know, legendary women's basketball coach. Well, you know, he grew up in the Philadelphia area, and he was playing at Bishop Kendrick in Norristown. And Chappie Moore, coach at Notre Dame High School, was also he was the football coach, but he was also the freshman basketball coach. He cut Gina Wariana from the boys' freshman basketball team at Bishop Kendrick.
No. Oh my God!
That's not fiction. That's fact.
Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about and where you're talking about. That's why I love Gino Auriemma. I know where he's coming from and his love for food and why he loves it and his mentality. That's why the women's basketball team is so good. I mean, you get that tough mentality, you got a chance to win. I've played many tournaments in Norristown, and the Philadelphia area has a lot of, just pride and whatnot. So that's awesome that the Soul are doing what they're doing, you know, to honor, the people that are doing what they're doing. So that's really awesome.
That's fantastic. Shane, we usually have on Susan from the USO. We'll have to hook up with you and Susan up there. She just comes on, talks about the USO and that. We're big supporters of policemen fired and all the people who serve our country every week. And it's every time I see a policeman, I always say, thank you for serving us, thank you for serving us. And well, Lawrence and Shane and Don, I got to tell you a funny story. Coming home from the Storm game on Saturday night, I stopped something off for a client up there, okay? Then I see a couple of Pasco sheriffs up there, and I said, they saw that we walking in the bar, dropping something off to them. I said, hey, do you work for the form? I said, yes. And you got the name of card up there and that, and I gave him my card up there, and I said, we got to come down to the game. Do you got a party bus? It says, we have a bus for you. Pick it to and from up. Well, the boys from the station, we got to have a good time down there for the Cleveland game. So that's what they're telling me right now.
So you got a good crowd coming up of law enforcement. That's terrific.
Definitely they're going to talk about that. But no, it's going to... But the word of the storm right now, it's back to the glory days of the Tampa Bay Storm. And Lawrence, I mean, I can't thank you enough, I mean, for coming on each week and talk about the storm up there. Shane, great to have you on again. Get you on regularly, talk about the storm. Lawrence, the best of luck to you in the city of Cleveland. Have a great time up there. I told Ben to bring me back a plane dealer if he gets a chance. I'm going to see what Hoynsey says about the plane dealer.
Tommy, one last question. Where do they play in Cleveland? What arena do you play in?
The Wells Fargo Arena.
Wells Fargo, okay.
Oh, is it Wells Fargo up there?
Isn't it the Q?
I think it's
the
Q, guys.
It's the Quick and Loan.
It's a Q up there, okay.
Yeah, it's
the
Q.
Yeah, it's the Q.
Yeah, it's not out of that godforsaken place in Richfield, I hope it's.
No, that's...
Hey, Don,
I'll tell you, Don, the queue's right across the street from the Jake.
Right.
Oh, that's okay.
Right.
That's beautiful.
And it's a block of down from Horseshoe Casino down there.
I wanted to make sure in case Tommy came up, he got to the right arena. He might be out in, you know, the wrong place.
Well, I know that my dad's old office building was the Terminal Tower. When you see that Lawrence go in the arena, that was he had an office up there in the 30th floor up there, and they used to go down there in the tower. They had all concessions down there, and they had this moral nut place. Every time we'd go by the nut place, I always had to buy some nuts for lunch up there and that. And then at Christmas time, they filmed the Christmas story, right, and it'd be Higbee's out there. And Cleveland's a great sports city, but they have only two seasons of the year, guys. July and the rest of the year. That's all I'm saying.
Good luck, Coach. Have a great weekend in Cleveland, and get back to Sarasota as quickly as you can.
Yes, sir.
Exactly. Good luck, Shane.
Good luck, Lawrence. Always a pleasure, Lawrence and Shane. Good luck, and bury that team in Cleveland for me.
That's right. All right. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care, Coach. Good luck.
Good luck. All right. Wow.
Thank you for everything.
I just got a question. You're going into a bar and dropping off some stuff after a storm game, and the cops are there. I'm just questioning, did they stop you? They thought you were running numbers or something?
No, because one of the establishments up there wanted some information, because remember Frank at halftime, we had Brett sign something up there.
Don't drag me into this one. I have to protect my license. Don't drag me into this.
Yeah, Brett couldn't go with you.
No, make a long story short, I want to surprise the Ashley. She's the manager for his local establishment up here, and I want to surprise her. And then the lights came on, the policeman out there, and that. And I went up to him, outgoing, had my storm shirt on. He said, "You work for the storm?" "Yes." And I, "Hold on, I got some information for him," and that. And the policeman gave me his name. "Well, we'll be sure to contact you. We want to come down as a group up there." "Hey, could 70
That's
guys
great.
Fit in a bus?" I said, "Sure, come on down and see us up there." I was good, but, you know, they didn't pick me up. I just wanted to be my outgoing self again, guys, and invite them down. We had a good talk about the storm and football. They went to their Threshers game about a month ago. They had a blast down there.
You know, Tommy, I just had an idea where you could have another bus trip. Go over and see the woman that we dealt with, the owner of the Lucky Hill. That would be a great place to run a crowd.
Definitely. Oh, gosh, yeah. I mean, Lucky Dillard, that's a great establishment up there. I got to talk to her about that. And you guys, I wish you could make it down for Matt's Turner press conference for All Sports Arenas. It's Wednesday, July 16th, and that. This is to announcing of the World's Tournament. And I was telling Frank before the program, Matt's getting a great response from the media around here. So I'm surprised. I really am shocked about that. So they're drive up from Tampa to go to this press event. So I'm totally shocked about that. So, but we're gonna it'll be fun up there. It'll be fun. Hey guys, what about this World Cup? Are you watching any of the World Cup games at all?
Hey Tommy, before we go a little further, you were talking about some of the Tampa's finance, and at the end of the program, we always dedicate the program, especially the guys that lost their lives during on the job. One of the guys, Randy Bell, the day that he was shot, his daughter was 2 years old. Today, she is getting ready at Jacksonville for a kidney transplant, Demetria Bell Jones. And so we're going to dedicate the program to her.
Thank you for saying that, Frank. Thank you for saying that. Jeez,
we wish her nothing but the very, very best. That's a ticklish operation, but it's taken care of in good fashion all across the country now. So
yes,
it should be in good hands.
Yes, God bless her for that. We'll say a prayer for her and make sure she's okay about that. But it's just tough. And have you watched any of the World Cup guys at all?
Very little.
USA game. Very little, except for that, right?
Well, what about this guy?
I got to be honest with you. I've seen all the reports come out that the sponsorships and all the things going surrounding the World Cup, are two or three times what we see with the Super Bowl in the United States. It's a tremendous, tremendous sport. But to me, it's very, very tough to watch. I tried to watch the other night. You sit there for an hour and they score one goal. And it's very, very difficult. And they'll say, well, you don't understand the technique and the ball handling and the sophistication of how they move the ball up and down. But I'll tell you, it's a very tough game for me to watch. I don't know about you guys.
I will say this, that today, I'm coming back from South Carolina, North Carolina, and They were talking about the ratings of the various games, not necessarily the USA game. And it was very interesting. It outdrew about 3-1 the championship game of the NHL. That surprised me. Now, the NBA championship game exceeded the World Cup, this one game they were talking about, by not a great margin, but enough. But then it also far exceeded the last game of the World Series for last year. I mean, it buried the World Series. And that really shocked me.
I would imagine the USA game, what is it, noon sign tomorrow. I mean, I would think that would be an ideal time. And I'll tell you, if you look at the papers in the Northeast Corridor, especially in New York, you know, the ethnic group is very, very high. Newark, New York, all up through New York State, through Pennsylvania. And
right.
I would imagine that, and the bars are having a field day. So I would imagine that there'll be more people watching that USA game tomorrow because of the significance. They have to either tie or win, or they don't get in the 16. So I would think there'd be a tremendous audience tomorrow.
Well, Don, I was talking to a friend of mine that lives out in Tucson, Arizona, earlier today, and he told me that they had the University of Arizona Stadium had 25,000 in the stadium to watch the big screen of the USA game.
So that gives you an indication. It's taking hold. It took a long, long time, but it's obviously taking hold in the United States because, as you said, you look at the ratings against the World Series or against the National Hockey League, and I would say that soccer fans and people involved with soccer, you know, have to be using this as a bellwork to get jump right into the major picture.
But Don, half those guys from the United States team are playing for the MISL, for these teams to play for the major soccer league here. Because that's what I've been reading. Some of these players have been there. But what about in this great event, the world's, you know, in this world for the World Cup? Why would some guy bite some other guy, you know, in a victory? Did you guys read about that? So that's inexcusable.
That's the third time he's done that, Tommy. The third
time. Right. I mean, that's inexcusable. Why would you ever do that? I mean, that's unusual.
Hey, you saw it, Tommy. You saw it in a World Championship heavyweight fight.
Yes,
why would you think they wouldn't do it in soccer?
Hey, Tommy, just to let you know, there was in Switzerland, they had a line going on it, and there was 300 people did bet that he would bite somebody, and the winning ticket, it was like $3,200, and it went down from there, but almost 100 people won.
Oh,
is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Why would you do that?
Frank, that just tells you people will bet on anything, right?
That's right. Great.
Well, in all honesty, they say it happens a lot of times in a scrum in football, too, that a lot of people get bitten. We don't hear much about it, but they say it does happen. I can't remember ever hearing anybody talk about it, but I'm talking
rugby's,
I mean,
another
publicly
place to
talk about it, but I've heard a lot of people talk about it. You know, not for the record.
Right. But once you get into a scrub with in rugby, everything's fair game. I mean, they bite, they push.
They'll do anything in rugby.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely about that. But it's funny because, like, I watched a couple of the soccer games, and it's been entertaining, you know. And, you know, I think, you know, because I want to watch USA, you know, see what these guys can do against the world up there. But why, if you're the USA coach, you would say, my team does not have a chance to win. Why would you say
two
that?
Two things. I can't imagine they gave up that game-tying goal in the last 20-some seconds of the game the other night. I couldn't believe that. And then on top of that, following up on what you said, Tom, I mean, there's so many people in the United States that are very, very knowledgeable on soccer. Mm-hmm. I just can't imagine why you'd go to a foreign country to get your coach to coach the United States soccer team. I just don't understand that.
That's a great point. Yeah. Well, look at Cleveland Cavaliers. They got a foreign guy, you know, got the new head coach, but he was from Princeton and then, and that's a good acquisition with the Cavs got. Here we go, guys. My favorite topic, not to get in there, LeBron James. Where is he going to go now? Here we go, the big soapbox coming up there. Where can he play basketball?
You're talking about Brock that was hired today by Cleveland, the new coach of Cleveland, basketball team?
Yes, you know, he coached for 30 years, and I think in the he coached the Russian team, I believe, for a championship. He coached in Israel. I think, you know, this guy's a great mentor of basketball right now. It's going to be
Did you see his press conference today?
No, I didn't see that.
One of the first questions they asked him was, who are you going to draft? He said, everybody.
That's on tonight, isn't it? The NBA draft tonight.
I think it's on tomorrow night in the NHL.
Yeah, tomorrow night.
They were talking in Charlotte about LeBron. A perfect place for him to settle would be up with the Charlotte team.
Ooh, that'd be great. That'd be great for, you know, you could draw a card, good drawing card up there, and then and guess who your owner is for Charlotte.
Number 23, the New York Post
has a big story today that he's very, very friendly with the coach of the Chicago Bulls.
So
they're speculating that that may be one of the teams. I mean, most everybody believes he's not going to leave, Florida.
Right.
But if he does, they think maybe the secondary choice may be Chicago because he's such good friends with the coach there.
Hey, Tommy. Yeah, we're joined. Talking about coaches, we're joined by one of the best coaches in baseball. Also, one of the best scorekeepers for our Rays here.
Yes. Oh, coach Bill Matthews. Bill, welcome aboard. And how about that? The game you weren't there 2 hours and 25 minutes today from the drop.
Yeah, you know that figures. You know, some days I have to go to my real job. And the one day I got to do it is the first time we go under 3 hours in about 6 months.
Yeah. Sorry about that, Baron, that bad news for you. But
no, I'm glad you guys had me on. It was great listening to you guys talking about the draft.
Oh, just and the thing about that, you know, Bill, we know the media down here and that, but, you know, David Price is going nowhere at the trading deadline. I don't think so. I mean, the talk for these talking heads down there, they want Price out of there, and the writer's been saying that. And, you know, it gets me frustrated to read articles in the paper in Tampa and St. Pete and to say, you know, like what one writer wrote something about it. I'm not going to say his name to protect him, you know, but he said the Rays should start selling the Trop, selling this. It's June baseball. It's not even the All-Star break. Anything could happen in the second half of the year. And that's what gets my pet peeve.
You know, here's my question. David Price is a year removed from the Cy Young.
Mm-hmm.
He's leading the league in strikeouts.
Right.
Sure, he's leading the league in hits allowed as well, but he's leading the league in strikeouts.
Right.
Now, at this point in time of the season, when teams are starting to figure out kind of where they're going to sit in their divisions, how do you decide what David Price is worth with relation to what other teams who are in the first and second spot in their divisions are willing to give up? Is David
Price
worth just minor leaguers? Is he worth two big leaguers and a part-time big leaguer in AAA? How do you determine that? These guys want to win pennants, and right now is not a good time to think about that because they're kind of settling into where they're going to be.
Well,
great
just
point.
Following up on what you're saying is that the guy I had a lot of faith in for years was Pat Williams. Even though it was the NBA, he did two things. He stockpiled draft choices all the time. And the second thing he said was, which is absolutely true, if you're going to trade a superstar, you're never going to get true value. You're never going to get true value for a superstar. And of course, he's traded a couple of big-time superstars, last one out of Orlando. And he said, you're never, ever going to get true value. You just have to take a chance.
Well, I just read the other day in Philly's coverage that if they were to trade Cliff Lee, you know, when he gets back off the DL and he is in good shape, they're going to have to get a player plus, but a player that can be a starter right now and go right on the field the day he's traded. Not any of these prospects. And a perfect example was they talk about when they traded Cliff before, and the prospects they got, the only guy that is left in the Phillies organization is Felipe Dumont, who's in the minor leagues and just can't get people out of the major leagues.
But Cliff Lee is damaged good. And he's been
That's a perfect example, Roger, of what I'm talking about and what Pat Williams said. He said, you know, it's very, very difficult. And as I said, you look what Orlando got when they traded away the big center. I mean, you just don't get value.
Yep.
Right.
Exactly. But Bill, I think that...
But you can also cross off a lot of teams. I mean, like the New York Yankees, they have nobody to give. I mean, the Yankees need a pitcher desperately.
Right.
But the thing is, they have nothing to give. The minor league talent is pretty well drawn out. And so they got to find a team we talked about earlier. St. Louis Cardinals, they have a great minor league system.
Mm-hmm.
The Chicago Cubs supposedly have a real strong minor league system right now that's still a year away from developing. But if you're going to get prospects, you got to get it from an organization that has something to give you back.
Well, we talked about last week about that Jonathan Singleton, who's now doing very well, and he was in the Hunter Pence deal, you know, but it took him a couple of years. Now he's producing.
You know, That's the dark horse. I think the Giants are the dark horse that are going to end up with Price.
Ooh.
And I don't say that because Dave was my roommate in college. That's got nothing to do with it. I just think that for the position that they're in, I think he makes the most sense.
Wow.
Well, they can certainly use another pitcher, no question about that. But I don't know that much about their... You know, what they had to give up in terms of prospects and or who they're going to give up on the major league level. Pardon me?
Yeah.
Did Lincecum finish the no-hitter today?
Yeah. Yes, he did. Yes, I saw that across the wire. Yes.
Wow. He got a no-hitter today.
Yes.
Yeah, he had no-hitter 2-8 with the last night.
Against the Padres.
Wow. Bill, I want to change the course a little bit and thank you as a coach. A friend of mine's son is playing over in East Cobb, outside of Atlanta, and that's in that travel league. You're probably familiar with it. And I know they were up in, I think, Charlotte, and then they're up in Flemington, New Jersey for quite a few games, and then they go to Boston. Can you talk a little bit about what these travel leagues are? I compare it to AAU. I'm familiar with it with girls' basketball, the boys' basketball. But exactly how does that work, and do college coaches go out to see these kids a lot?
Sure. I'll give you the condensed version. First of all, that facility in Flemington, New Jersey, Jack Cusk's father built that for him so he'd have a place to work out in the offseason. That's just a little aside.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. He built it personally for his son, and now his son has turned it into a pretty good cash cow. Here's the story on travel ball. Travel ball versus AAU. Travel ball is, they like to take a step up because they pick the best players in the area. They give them the fee that they have to pay for hotel, uniform, insurance. So they get to pay the money. They join the teams, and they just hop on the bus, and they make the tour, the grand tour, whether it's Pomona, Minneapolis, Dallas, or whether it's the east side of the country. Is it the best way to find the best talent? You know, I'm talking from 28 years of college experience. No, it's not. It's the best way to find the best talent that can afford to play with that team. That's really kind of what it is. I think the assumption is amongst parents now, the more I pay, the more exposure my kid's going to get, and the better the team's going to be. And that's just not true. You know, if he gives, for example, if he gave me the opportunity to pick the 20 best high school players in St. Pete and the 20 best high school players in Tampa, and then I took those 40 kids and I made a roster of 25, I could go anywhere in the country for free if I had somebody footing the bill and beat anybody anywhere, anytime.
Hmm.
Wow.
Interesting.
How about that? Is it all wood bats in this league?
Yeah, it's wood bats, Don. Hmm. It's wood bats.
Okay. Yeah, interesting. My friend's son plays
for Hooper High School. I know you're familiar with them.
Yeah, I sure am.
In Birmingham. Yeah.
Hmm. Wow, that's a
do I think it's the best way to get kids exposed? No. I think that if you can play, you're going to find out about them. You know, I couldn't be everywhere every day, but I had people that knew me, trusted me, would send kids to me, and they'll call me and they say, you know, hey, there's a kid in LaBelle, Florida, who's a great athlete, he's a great kid, he's going to be a great organizational guy, and he's got a 92 grade point average. You know, he can help you. Well, okay, I'll take him. I don't even care if I've seen him. If this guy that I know and I trust has recommended him to me and he knows me, I'm going to take him. I don't have to go to East Cobb and look at 30 different fields and have to pay $500 for a golf cart to drive to those fields to find good players. All I'm going to find is the best players of the kids who can afford to be there.
Interesting.
Well, let me switch gears again and ask you about the College World Series, because I thought the College World Series this year, for the most part, was terrific. I don't know all the negativism about the fact that they want them now to move in the fences. There weren't any home runs hit. I think they only had two or three home runs hit in the whole series. But just some of your thoughts on the College World Series, what you thought of the level of play, and what you think about the home run situation.
I think the College World Series is a good example of how the modified aluminum bats are actually becoming more like wood. So my question is, why not go to wood? That's another discussion for another day. But they're not going to move the fences. You know, 10 years ago, there were 147 home runs hit in the College World Series.
Wow.
Guys were hitting baseballs like they were titleists. It was unbelievable.
Right.
Now there's only three. Well, okay, are you coming to watch a baseball game, or are you coming to watch Home Run Derby?
Great point. I come to watch a baseball game. Bill, what I've been watching a lot, the College World Series, also the girls' softball. That's another exciting thing about how fast these girls can wind up with that softball, and how fast these girls are run down their baseline, and how powerful these young ladies are hitting the balls in the out of the ballpark. That's been fascinating me about the
If you watch good women's softball, Olympic softball, international softball, there's very little difference between the women and the men, honestly.
Sure.
You know, guys are getting it up there at 82, which from 45 feet is the equivalent of like 117. But the women are getting it up there at 75, which is still pushing 100 miles an hour. There's very little difference. Now, if you want to have a great job, hey, coach softball. Games take 50 minutes. You can coach four games a day. You can coach for 200 minutes, which is 3 hours and 20 minutes. You can make a bundle of money, and you can still be home for dinner without even breaking a sweat.
Wow.
You coach baseball, and you're out there all day long, and a doubleheader, you're out there for 10 hours.
Oh,
right.
But we all love
I agree with you on the softball. Another factor is you don't see the women's arms go bad because it's underhanded. And as far as the speed goes, my daughter, when she was a freshman in high school, pitched a seven-inning game against Steinert High School, and I got there late, and in 45 minutes, the game was over.
The game was over, yeah.
Seven-inning softball game in 45 minutes.
Wow.
That's pretty impressive.
Well, the other thing
you know,
about
one of the
arm situation, I'd comment on, you know, Baltimore lost their catcher. We just went down I can't believe it, how he went down. I've never seen catchers go down with the Tommy John surgery, but it did with him.
That's right. Good point. I think it's the first catcher that ever happened, because you figure, well, he's always throwing the ball.
I don't know if he's the first, Tommy, but he's certainly probably not going to be the last. I can't imagine how this is happening to everybody.
Wow.
Well, it's happening because of overuse. It's happening because of AAU teams, travel teams. It's happening because kids who are 14 years old and getting into high school think they need the exposure, so they join three teams. They're playing two, three games in the middle of the week. They're playing doubleheaders on Saturdays, doubleheaders on Sundays. So at the age of 14, they're playing seven games a week.
They're
traveling to hotels. They're not taking care of themselves. They're not eating right. They're not lifting in between. There's no arm programs for the health of the arm. That's why it's happening, because everybody thinks more is better. that's just not the case.
Well, and there's no limit on a catcher, right, Bill?
I'm sorry?
There's no limit. There's no limit
there
on
no
the
limit.
Catcher.
No, the limit is how many games I can play. That's the limit.
Mm.
Right.
Bill, when you used to, when you're recruiting, you look at a player's background, you say, well, this kid here, you know, is a normal player. Would you recruit this kid over the guy playing all his other six games a week, or just want to recruit the guy who just plays his average one game per week for high school up there or not? Because this guy here...
I mean, you know, the first thing I look at when I show up at a park is what time the kid shows up in relation to his teammates. How he looks when he walks onto the field.
Hmm.
And if he talks to his teammate and his coach before the game starts.
Wow.
And if it's one of those things that he doesn't do, I'm not going to recruit him because I'm going to be with this kid for 9 months out of the year.
Right.
And he better be a good person who can take direction. Because if he isn't, he's just not going to fit. I don't care how good he is. I can make players better. Hell, baseball is a game of repetition. It's not basketball where you got to be able to jump and shoot, or football where you got to be strong. I can make a baseball player better. It's a game of repetition. If they're athletic, I can make them better. But if they're not a good person, there's nothing I can do with
them. That's a good point.
Great.
Coach,
let me
ask you one other question that's open to controversy now. In fact, they just changed the rule yesterday.
Yeah.
Blocking the plate. I'm good friends with Timmy McCarver, and this is something that he has really been in the forefront of, catchers not getting whacked by blocking home plate. Now, there's a difference of opinion. Flaherty of the Yankees, who does their games last night on YES, talked a great deal about it, and he said the reason they got hurt was because they don't set up correctly and that the rules should not be enforced that they can't block the plate. What's your opinion of the new rule?
Well, the only change in the rule was Rule 713 is not going to be enforced on a force play. It'll
right.
be enforced on a tag play, but not on a force play. So
that's because they made the mistake with Pittsburgh.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's my answer to that question. The way the game has evolved and the way contracts have evolved, they can't afford, with the players' union, the collective bargaining agreement, fans that want to see players who are paying a minimum, the cheapest ticket now is $14 to get to the stadium.
Right.
They can't afford to lose a marquee player like a Buster Posey because of a good old-fashioned, old-school collision. You know, that stuff doesn't fly anymore. It's 2014. I understand the alpha male, and I understand the macho side, but it's 2014, and contracts are too big to let that happen.
Right.
Well, we talked about it, and they showed it. I don't know if you had a chance to see YES last night, but they showed the way Posey set up, and he explained during the course of the game that his leg was broken because of the way he set up at home plate. And
that's an instantaneous decision. You know, that's not a planned thing. It's just he throws his leg there
right.
where it is.
Right.
Hey, Bill, I got a question. What happened last night? You made a great call on that, and you know, about that interference call. Could you explain that, the interference call, one more time for everybody out there?
That was the first time I'd ever seen that, and I got help from Charlie Relliford, who's the umpire evaluator who was on site at the last night. It was a Polanco was at first base. Marte hits a weak pop-up that Loney comes off the bag to make the catch. Well, in coming back to the bag, Polanco bumps into Loney in fair territory, and the umpire signals that there's interference, but the ball's caught.
Oh.
So as a result of that, the batter runner, who is Marte, is awarded first base because the ball was in fair territory.
Hmm.
Right.
So Polanco's out for the interference call. Marte takes his place at first base, but Marte also gets charged.
Isn't that because of the interference call takes precedence, so what happens after that is immaterial. So the fact that he caught the ball didn't make any difference because the interference took place before the ball was caught. So that makes it a dead play.
The key part is that the interference took place in fair territory.
Oh, okay.
That's why Marte was awarded first base.
Right.
Hmm. Okay, that was a great call that you made your last night, because I was doing the Kid Ray radio, and I trying to explain to Steve that he thought it was a bad call. No, Bill made a great call there. The ball's
Tommy, it's been called twice in the last week.
Yeah, it happened to the
Yankee game earlier this week.
That's correct. Yep.
Wow.
And I got a footnote, Charlie Relliford, because I would not have been able to make that call without him. Charlie's a great guy. He'll call me from wherever he is and say, you know, hey, Bill, I got a scoring question. He called me from Korea at one of the World Baseball Classic qualifiers one day and said, hey, Billy, I got a question for you. I said, sure, Charlie, where are you? He said, well, I'm in Seoul.
But then I had to
give, because, you know, the scribes, they all want the rule.
Right.
I had to go on the mic and say, you know, according to rule 10.03,
yeah,
subsection 5B, I felt like an attorney. I was like, you know, what am I doing?
don't feel badly, because in the Yankee game, they had four umpires out there. They didn't know what to do. They had to go back and get a replay on it, first of all, then make a decision. And then they didn't know how to explain it. So it's something that's not very well known.
Well, Lance Barksdale was all over it, and it was probably because it had just happened 48 hours prior.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Right. That's correct.
All my years of baseball.
Lance made the call right away.
But, Bill, the question of the day, was the writers paying attention to that, or were they drinking coffee or getting their popcorn?
You know what? If I didn't yell heads up when a foul ball was headed to the press box, you'd have guys getting hit in the keys every night. Nobody's watching the game.
Especially Mark Tompkins. One year, he ball hit his foul ball, guys, and his computer busted his computer.
Tompkins always, he's got irons in the fire everywhere. He's got three computers going at once.
But it was a great thing for Mark, Bill, and everybody. You know, I've known Mark for 30 years, and Bill, you know, he's a legend in this town for top baseball writer.
He's the most honest writer who doesn't dig for dirt in America.
Great person. Great guy. And his opinions are great up there. And I know Mark for 30 years. He's been a friend of mine, and I respect him tremendously. And, you know, always good to see him up here. He says, Tommy, how you been? And he says, well, I'm going to go to Cleveland, see Bobby D up there. I'm going to go see this guy up there. Tommy, you said hello. Thank you, Mark.
You know, it was great having the Pirates in town this weekend. Ray Searidge, who spent 22 years between his last appearance as a Major League player and his first day back as a Major League coach, 22 years. His last 3 years in the big leagues were my first 3 years of Eckerd, and Ray was the same team. So he would come over and work out with us every single day. So I've known Ray since 1990, and it was so good to see him, man. There was big hugs going around. Jeff Lipsy was in the dugout. I met Jeff Lipsy when he was 6 years old, and I was playing for his father at Eckerd College. So it was just great to have the Pirates in town. It was great.
Oh, did you say 22 years, Coach?
22 years between his last day as a player and his first day as a big league coach.
Wow.
Isn't that great?
Unreal, because like he used to, you know, Bob Gibson out of my high school, you know, he got to know Ray for the Brewers up there and that, so he always leave his tickets up there and that, and then they come back to the house, meet my mom, said, you know, she cooked him a meal, and he got to get together real good up there. Then one time Ray was a big Buccaneer fan, so we sat there, we said season tickets out there and now watching football. Make a long story short, guys. One day in Bright House Field, they ought to, hey, Ray, what the hell are you doing here, Tommy? I said, I want to interview you, Nate. You got a minute?
He's one of the most genuine guys in baseball.
Oh, definitely. Great guy.
Yeah. Coach,
great
another
son,
one more rules, one more rules question
for
you. That is
with the
shift. Everybody's using the shift now. Okay,
yep.
Now, what do you do about the infield fly rule? If you got the second baseman playing in short right field, and you got runners on first and second. This transpired a couple of days in the Dodger game, you may remember. You know, when does he call the infield fly rule?
That's a very good question. And my answer to that is it doesn't matter what the position player is. It matters where he's located. So in some of these over shifts where he's in short right field, it's not going to be the infield fly rule, even though it's the second baseman. It can't be. The infield fly rule has to be a play that, if dropped, can be caught by another infield.
Great. That's a great point, because like Don was saying, all these shifts around there. Bill, what's your opinion about all these shifts around, these, you know, all these shifts teams are doing right now?
Do you want my honest opinion, Tommy?
Yes.
How many listeners do we have tonight? Because I'm going to piss off about half of them.
Frank, how many? Frank?
Wait a minute. Frank will tell us in 1 second. Frank, what
yes,
do we got
that's
tonight?
Right.
Well, we lost Frank for a minute.
We'll come back to that one.
We'll give you an answer in a minute.
My honest opinion is that it's really sad that hitters can't go the other way anymore.
Ooh. Mm-hmm.
I agree 100%.
Yep. Amen.
But the same thing, Coach, with the bunt. I mean, they say, well, they can't bunt. What do you mean they can't bunt? They've been playing baseball since they were little league. And you're going to tell me that if the shortstop's standing by second base and there's nobody on the left side, that they can't either hit the ball there or bunt the ball there? I mean, that's crazy.
Well, okay, you watch batting practice, and you get three cursory bunts each round, maybe, if you're lucky. And the guys out front are playing hockey with the bunts, trying to see if they can hit it back into the cage with a hockey shot. So it's a joke. In spring training, they get the machine set up behind home plate at one of the stations, shooting rubber balls at you from 15 feet away. But after spring training's over, you don't get 30, 40 bunts a day. All you get is your three obligatory, okay, lay it down, now I'm going to hack and hit it out of the park.
Man, anybody could do that at 45 miles an hour. You and I can still do that.
Absolutely right. And so we don't do it enough to actually use it as a tool of the game.
Well, how about Pittsburgh the other night? Pittsburgh did a great thing about bunting, moving the runners up there. And that's the best part of the game when you move the runners or when you sacrifice bunt. And look at Desmond Jennings tonight, Bill. I thought he stole home for sure about that. That's great. That's great aggressive baseball.
Yeah, it is. And you know, the thing you're talking about, Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh bunts with a purpose. The Rays are now in a position where they only bunt if it's a first and third situation.
Right.
Because it was a play that Sim talked to Joe Madden about. They don't sacrifice people anymore. The only time they bunt is when it's first and third. Whereas Pittsburgh, if Hurdle says lay it down, they lay it down. And they move guys. Last night, first and second, nobody out. Hey, there's my bunt. Second and third, what do you got next? Base hit. Now we got two more runs.
Well, Earl Weaver never believed in bunting at any time. Earl Weaver didn't think he'd ever bunt.
Yeah, but he had some guys who could hit the ball pretty far.
Yes. But when this Pittsburgh team, Bill, boy, they're fundamentally sound up there. They were bunting the ball, and they had a field day in the base patch, and thank God David Price, they shut him down for David's victory today. But before that, you know, I was talking to Alex Cobb after the game just to see, wish him luck in the road trip. He said, "Alex, how fast is Pittsburgh?" He says, "Tommy, they're so fast. You got to watch them every minute. These guys that take off with a blink of an eye, they're telling me that's how fast these guys were."
Well, plus they got three center fielders playing the outfield.
Oh gosh, yeah.
How does the ball drop and you get three guys that can play center field?
Oh,
I mean, any fly ball should be caught.
Exactly. Bill, you saw McCutchen for the last two days up there. I think he's the best player in the National League in all of baseball right now. He gets speed, power, and his agility in the field.
Who's this?
He's Andrew McCutchen.
Oh.
Yeah, somebody asked me last night, if you were going to be a GM, first-time GM, you were going to start a team, who'd be your first pick without hesitation? I said it would be McCutchen because he's a catalyst. How many catalyst players are there in the league anymore? How many guys do you think can step up and start a rally every time they get to the plate? There aren't too many of those guys around anymore.
No,
McCutchen is that guy.
Right.
The only guy I could think of back in the 90s, in the 90 Cleveland Indians, Kenny Lofton was the same thing. He led off. If he gets on base, he steals second. He goes to third. And every time the Indians gets on base, the Indians score a runner more, and that's why he's a catalyst of the 90s up there.
Tommy, I agree with both of you, but at the same time, if I were going to pick right now, I don't know that I would pick that Puig from the Los Angeles Dodgers because he could do anything. That guy, I mean, he could hit home runs. I mean, he can steal bases. He makes great defensive. I mean, there's a guy who's got fire. What an arm he has. Oh, my God. You see him throw from right field? You haven't seen
definitely.
Anything like that in years.
No, I mean, since Von Hayes, but the old Phillies had a great arm. Remember Von Hayes?
Sure.
Oh, my God,
Great
purple,
arm up there.
Eight. Yep.
but Bill, you probably know this, everybody, that before Tropicana Field was a baseball field, right? They had to get Von Hayes down, and Don, and everybody knows they had to take Don, you know, take Von Hayes up or hit pop ups to try to the catwalks. He's
you
probably
see
seen
hit
all these
300 feet up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, remember they did that at the Astrodome because that was the first indoor baseball stadium.
Right.
Right.
But
Richie Allen was the first guy to hit the beam there. Remember?
That's right. Yeah.
Richie Allen was the first one to put one up there and hit the beam going out of the park. They didn't know whether to call it a home run or what the San Jose
was. That's exactly right.
There was no C-ring catwalk. Oh my God, Bill! I think the Rays are going to. You know, I've still got confidence in Andrew Friedman. I still got confidence in Joe Madden and our staff. I think it's time for you get a moral, a moral victory with David Price. We all Baltimore. The weekend series, try to get this thing close to 500 before the break would be a great.
They got a long way to go, Tommy.
I know, but I still got confidence in Joe and the Rays up there, Don. I still got confidence in them, and just got to see what happens. We go from there. That'd be
not,
great.
It's not Stratomatic baseball. It's real baseball. It takes time and patience.
Right, and the Tampa Bay media is always hammering. The trough, they're always hammering, Molina.
Forget about that stuff. That doesn't mean anything.
Oh, I know. I don't read the papers. But today, Molina had a good game today. He had two hits today. I mean, Bill, how about the player Kiermaier out in the field? He's going to be a star in this league, I think.
Kiermaier is a very, very good athlete. My comment on Molina is, I don't gamble because I'm a college coach. But if you're going head to head with Molina in a foot race, I'm putting a house on you.
I couldn't beat him, Bill. Come on now. I'd be cracking.
Well, you know,
up the
I'll tell
time.
You one other thing. If you wanted, you were talking about hitting the right field a little bit ago and the ability to do it. If I had one guy as a hitting coach that I wanted to work with, and if you ever saw him in batting practice, that was Richie Allen. Richie Allen hit more balls to right field when he first stepped in a batting practice. Right field, center field, he'd tell you where he was going to hit it. He'd even hit it left-handed, and he hit it left field, right field, center
Amazing.
Field. I mean, to me, I'll tell you, he was one of the great hitters that I ever saw. Mm-hmm. And shame he had other problems, but I'll tell you, he knew how to hit.
I agree with about
and
that.
And he wore glasses. Some of these players need to wear glasses.
Bottles. Yeah,
and a good thing about Richie Allen, guys, he drew good in the dirt. I remember the bone had October 2nd on it. Richie was drawing in the dirt up there and that. But when Richie wanted to play, he was on the best Philadelphia Phillies ever. That 40-ounce bat.
I'll tell you, Roger will tell you right now, they're making a big push to get him in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, they are.
Oh, that's good. You know, do you think he's got the numbers getting in the Hall of Fame, guys, you think? Or
he does. He does. If you look at the numbers, right, Don, he has them.
Oh, absolutely. He's got numbers better than some of the people that are in there.
Mm. That's right. And, they're talking about Jimmy Rollins, when he retires. He's got numbers as good or better than Barry Larkin right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
And the thing about this, guys, this question me, Fred McGriff, played baseball during the steroid era. He has 493 home runs. He should be in the Hall of Fame up there because Fred McGriff was a great team player, got a couple World Series under his belt. I remember when he played with the Toronto Blue Jays, I was in Cleveland one day, and he said to me, Tommy, you think Tampa Bay ever get a baseball team? I said, look, I'm Fred, I know so, and wouldn't it be great if you played for him? He looked at me and says, hey, Tommy, I think you're going to be right. When Fred McGriff was down with the Rays, back in the Devil Rays, to see Fred, I was right. Yeah, Tommy, you were right. But it's just a great game of baseball, and I mean, it's You know, Bill, you do such a great job down at the Tropicana Field, the official score. It's a pleasure to hear your voice over to doing the pitching lines and everything else. Question of the day, what are you going to do for 11 days off right now? This is going to be work for us after that big homestand.
You know, it's really strange. If I wasn't on the phone right now, I don't know what I'd be doing. I'm not
you'd be watching the game.
I don't know what to do.
I'd be watching the game. Yeah, I'm not used to working less than 15 hours a day, so I'm a little confused.
You'd be watching the Yankee game. They're on 4-1 right now. And they're in the bottom of the fourth inning in Toronto. And one last question from me. I'm a stickler for Hall of Fame. I just think they put too many people in. It's like putting numbers on retired numbers at Yankee Stadium. I mean, you're putting guys in that are good ball players, not great ball. But to me, if you're talking about Ruth and Gehrig and DiMaggio and Mantle, and you know, I mean, they're Hall of Famers. I mean, we got guys in there now that you know, are very good players, but that's not Hall of Fame.
I have to agree with you, Don, about that. There's too many players in the Hall of Fame, and what killed these guys right now is the steroids. You figure Bonds was a cinch, Clements was a cinch. All these guys that took that, you know, Rafael Palmeiro was a cinch. All these guys took the juice. They were, before that, they were essentially getting the Hall of Fame, especially Clements up there now. Now, my argument is Fred McGriff is 493 home runs, okay? He's not even on the ballot anymore. You know, Jack Morris, another great pitcher for the Tigers and the Blue Jays, just hasn't got in there. Another one. How about Bert Blyleven, you know, the old Dutchman for all those great teams he played for? Except when he played with the Indians, he was downside of his career up there.
Okay. Hey, listen,
sorry,
I saw Pee Wee Reese and Phil Rizzuto play.
Oh,
they're in the Hall of Fame. I'm not saying Larry Bowa belongs in the Hall of Fame, but he didn't make it to the second ballot. He didn't get enough votes on the first turnaround to even be on the ballot the second year.
His personality overrode it.
Ooh,
there you
go. Right.
Now we can tell him how many listeners do we have right now? You were off the line when we asked that question.
There we go,
I'm
Bill.
Sitting there just listening to you guys. Just keep on going.
Oh no!
What do we got tonight,
what's the number, Frank?
Right now we're at 192.504.
Wow.
There you go, Bill. Any more?
There you go.
I'm not trying to change the face of the game. I'm just trying to be honest.
Well, no. Any more comments, Bill? We got the listeners right now. They want to hear some more baseball comments from yourself.
Well, I was telling me before about hitting to all fields. I think in college baseball, a lot of schools don't do a good job of teaching that because you can cheat with aluminum, so you don't really have to learn how to hit the other way. You know, if you just make contact, the ball's going to go somewhere. So I think that if you can make the adjustment, since we've modified wood bat so much, I think within 5 years, all of college baseball is going to be swinging wood bats.
Do you really?
I really believe that. I really do. And it's not about cost. It's, you know, the whole cost argument. It's ridiculous. I mean, for the cost of aluminum bats right now, you can buy 6 wood bats. So if a school's buying 50 bats, 50 aluminum bats for the year, why not buy 300 wood bats?
Great point. I mean, these kids put Little League wooden bats. You know, it's funny because they go to college with aluminum bats, and these kids are brought up in high school and, you know, junior varsity and junior high with the wood bats up there.
And
the other thing is they've got to get the same rules in the National and the American League. Let's have the designator everywhere, or don't have it. And I don't think they're going to do away with it. So let's put it in the National League.
Sure.
And at least stabilize what's going on.
I don't think that'll happen.
No, but how many careers have saved in the American League? Because everybody's up there in the age. Especially Carlton Fisk, he was the DH. It saved so many great careers.
Tommy, look at the game now. The game has changed.
Right.
I mean, these kids that are pitchers, they don't hit from the time they're now in ninth grade in high school until they get to the, if they are good enough to get to the National League, that's the next time they hit.
I think that the DH is not going to change. I don't think both leagues are going to go to it. I think both leagues are hung up on the novelty of being different, and I think the novelty of being different
is more important to them right now than having consistency in the game.
Yeah, you're probably right. You're probably
great,
right.
Great point. Bill,
but remember, years back, we had a president of the National League, a president of the American League, and a president of the Umpires Association, and now we got one group. So it may change. I mean, one way or the other, you can never tell. They might change.
Right. Bill, enjoy your time off, sir. Thank you so much for coming on.
It's been an absolute pleasure. I love talking to you guys anytime.
Same here, Bill.
Take care.
Thank you so very much.
Take care, Bill. Great job.
Terrific
home
time.
Thank you. I'll talk to you guys
soon. We appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you, Bill.
Great. Very insightful.
I'd like to walk him there.
What are Phillies doing, Roger?
Down 3-0. Bottom of the fourth.
Down 3-0.
I'm watching this, and here we go. They're going to pop up, and a guy in the left field made a dumb play out there. Oh, Marlon Jai dropped the ball. Well, I'd like to walk in the program, our golf pro, Doug, what'd you think about the U.S. Open at Pinehurst? I know Don's been wanting to ask that question the last couple weeks up there. So, Don, take it away.
Yeah, talk to me.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm from an aesthetic standpoint, I can't say that I thought Pinehurst looked beautiful the way they redesigned it. But at the same time, I think if they played it next year or the year after, it would have been much better. They didn't give the off-fairway, you can't call it rough, actually sand or whatever the heck they had in there with the bushes. It didn't have enough time to mature. And so being off the fairway really wasn't a factor, Doug. What did you think?
Right. Yeah, I agree with you. You know, those waste areas, I guess, getting back to a more naturalized kind of a setting, you know, I guess is aesthetically pleasing to some. But as you know, the USGA likes to set up that championship extremely difficult. You know, typically when you miss a fairway, it's very penal in terms of the length of the rough that they keep for the week. So, you know, in most situations, they begin that process by talking to the superintendents well in advance to make sure that they allow that to grow several inches in length, which makes it extremely difficult to advance the golf ball or even get it back into a playable situation. So, I mean, as you saw, Keimer was, you know, what was he, 10 under, 8 under, 7 under, you know, so typically in the USGA championship, that's not going to be the case where you're going to have a guy that far under par. I mean, you can remember years where maybe, I think Angel Cabrera won one year at 1 over par, you know what I mean, or typically even is what people are shooting for in the U.S. Open. So, I mean, Donald Ross and a lot of his designs, as we talked about prior to the Open, is pretty diabolical with his greens and, you know, a lot of those championships, you know, they're keeping those alive essentially for the week, so they're not really spreading a whole lot of water on them. And, you know, you saw a lot of shots that were typically, you know, in any other situation would have been good shots that, you know, there's only a certain area from a shelf standpoint that ball can land on and be playable to stay on that green. So, you know, it was a very difficult, you know, situation with some of those pin placements. I thought it was kind of cool that they allowed some of those guys to, by moving the tees up, attack some of those short par fours and make some of those holes kind of fun.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I thought that
was
pretty cool.
They made that one hole, it ran from, 210? I don't know, 310. It went from 310 to 330 to 295. I agree with you. I thought that was gave them a great shot to try to drive the green, but also had the traps right around there. If they missed by a little bit, boy, they were in trouble.
It was certainly some risk-reward involved in some of those shots, and, you know, those guys are so stinking good with wedges that, you know, some of them can take their chances just flipping a wedge in there. So, you know, it was fun to watch. You know, I got to think that, you know, Martin Keimer played wonderful for four rounds of golf. So, I mean, he certainly deserved to win that championship. But, you know, truth be told, I mean, I was rooting for some other people there to, you know, play a little bit better. Kuchar and Dustin Johnson and some of those guys, you know, I'd hope they'd play a little bit better, but so be it.
Well, I thought that just to change the subject for a second, come back to the Open, but I thought one of the great shots for golf, one of the great boosts for golf was Michelle Wee winning the Open this week.
Mm-hmm.
She's, you know, they're talking about her from the time she was 13, Mm-hmm. Until now, she's established a new individual putting stance that she developed herself. She's had a great 6 weeks, the last six, and then winds up winning the Open. I really think that and will give women's golf a real shot in the arm. I think they've got a shot now to start drawing some people.
Yeah, well, you said it. You said to change the subject. But, I mean, Michelle Wee's all grown up now. You know, she, you know, like you said, she was kind of a phenom. And, I mean, she hit some of her shots. If you looked kind of like as a what's in the bag, she plays a forged blade club from Nike. And she hits the golf ball as far as a lot of men do. I mean, she's a very powerful female with an extremely fundamental golf swing that can just absolutely hit the – she can hit it a ton. What a player. It seems funny that it's taken her kind of this long to put it all together and actually win a major championship. But I couldn't be happier that she actually did it. I was really rooting for her. You know, my comment actually – my wife's comment was, don't they have a length of shorts rule on the LPGA? That was actually her comment.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. I mean, you know, a lot of
Michelle Wee takes advantage of that.
Well, you know, that kind of coupled with your comment of the brand-new putting style, you know, if they were to do some close-up views there, you know, that's probably borderline. You know what I mean? In terms of what you're looking at there. So, but yeah, I was definitely rooting for her. It was nice to see her win. You know, I know that girl, Stacey Lewis, the number one player in the world for women. I think she birdied the last two holes to get herself back
right.
to, you know, a really good situation there to, you know, and Michelle Wee, you know, almost had a problem coming down the stretch there where she made double bogey, on that one hole where she had to take an unplayable because she hit it.
Right.
You know, that bush and whatnot, and had some problems, you know, the rest of the way. So that could have been ugly had she not birdied the final or the 17th.
But the other thing that she did was she didn't have a 3-putt green anywhere along the last round. She had, that's one of the things that has killed her over the last couple of years. As you say, all the other parts of her game were strong until she developed individually, came up with this idea. Her idea was that most short players, short in stature, putt better than tall players.
Yeah.
That's why she established that 45-degree angle putt.
Right.
It's really a novelty to look at.
Yeah, the tabletop is, I think, what she called it. So, and that's a phenomenal statistic and a phenomenal feat to work your way around four rounds of golf at, you know, in this case, Pinehurst, but in a USGA championship and not 3-putt because, you know, like I said, some of those greens can be really, really difficult and coupled with some tough pin placements and, you know, just having a bad hole every now and again. You know, you think you 3-putt sooner or later. So that was incredible. She played well, and
right.
again, she deserved that, you know, that championship. And that's going to change the rest of her life, you know. To be a major champion is not only an impressive feat, but that's what all players are judged by, unfortunately. You know what I mean? So.
And, of course, something else that was done this week that hadn't been done since, 1958, seven consecutive birdies coming home to win the tournament.
Yeah, that's, wow. I mean, you know, that's something you dream about, and that's something that's only really present on some kind of a video game, you know, typically, that, you know, you're allowed to get into that situation. I mean, that's, you talk about being in the zone, you know what I mean, so to speak, in whatever sport you're in where, you know, guy hits a home run. You say, "Hey, listen, Fred, what pitch did you hit?" And he says, "You know, heck, I don't know. You know what I mean? I didn't even feel it. I just hit it." And it's no different in any other sport. And golf's the same way, where you don't really think about mechanics. You don't think about fundamentals. You don't think about, you know, bad things that could happen. You see it, you hit it, and you just react. And all of a sudden, next thing you know, you make a putt and you build some confidence, and you know everything starts to kind of momentum-wise just really gather there for him. So.
Right. Well, they were my four questions. I'll let the rest of you guys.
No. Do you have any more?
You know, the bigger news is probably the fact that, you know, we're going to see a Tiger Woods sighting this week. You know, in his championship here at Congressional.
Not
so.
Probably going to see it. You're going to see it. It's his tournament, and he's going to play.
Right. That's
right.
Right. So, I'm anxious to see where he stands in his rehab. And if this is, you know, I've always posed the question that if you took a PGA Tour professional and you said, listen, we're going to go play you know, I don't know, some random place, country club or whatever, that, you know what I mean, they'd probably cruise around there in 65, you know, and that's, you get these guys into a championship or a tournament, and then all of a sudden they see a pack right pin placement, they want to hit a high cut, you know what I mean? So everything changes to the point where, like, look, you guys are so good that you can just hit the ball pretty much straight, and if you just hit it in the middle of the fairway, in the middle of the greens, you'd probably shoot no worse than 65, 68. So all of a sudden, you know what I mean? Like, so if Tiger Woods, what I'm saying is, you know, when he won some of the British Opens he won and those sorts of things, he never even hit driver in any of those events. He would hit, remember, he was big on that two-iron stinger, and he was hitting the five-wood and the three-wood and all these different clubs just to put him in play. And it wasn't about how far he hit it. It was about, you know, realizing that if he kept it in the fairway or close to the fairway, that he had a better chance to score. So, you know, being, and you guys know too, you remember Lenny Dykstra, one of the years he won the batting title, he actually had a pulled muscle in his rib cage. Mm-hmm. And so what he said was it cut down on his swing, so he became more of a contact hitter. You know, so maybe some of the hope is that with Tiger Woods, that, you know, still kind of coming off an injury, you know, can he make some controlled swings and not really worry about how far he hits it, but just hitting it solidly and getting it in play and giving himself a chance to score? You know, maybe that could be something.
Well, he was terrific on his press conference. Did you? I don't know if you had a chance to see it because you're working, but
of course, yeah.
He talked about the fact that you know, he almost hopped out of bed the next day. It wasn't like this was a an operation where he couldn't. It was immobile for a period of time, and he said he started off by just putting the ball on his five-hole putting green in the back of his house, and he used that, and he putted, but then he couldn't reach down to get the ball out of the hole, so he devised a system where the ball, he put to the hole and the ball would roll back out again so he could pick it up. he had a lot of technique there.
Well, I'm sure that the operation that he had, I'm sure, created an enormous amount of relief for him because of, you know, a lot of those back situations, you feel, you know, some protrusion in terms of whatever you're trying to alleviate, whether it's a disc or, something that's in the back there. So I'm sure he received an awful lot of relief from that situation because, you know, he was probably trying to go through treatments prior to that were just masking the pain or just, you know, essentially dealing with it, managing it, if you will.
Well, he started off by saying that he couldn't even get out of bed in the morning. Nobody had to help him. He couldn't get out of bed and get up, and that's how bad it got.
That's just one of those things, and, you know, I know you guys from time to time, obviously, we talk about some different tips, you know, for the week, and that's actually a good segue into a situation where we take that kind of stuff for granted in terms of our health and our flexibility and our strength and all those sorts of things, where you see guys that show up, and they, you know, I see it all the time, where they might hit a few putts or something like that, but they wind up going to the first tee, no stretching, you know, no flexibility, no, you know, real swings with golf balls, and they stand there and they hit driver off the first tee, you know, and those are setups for eventually, you know, getting hurt or, you know, someone injured where you can't even make a golf swing. I mean, think about how important it is for you to hold your posture in terms of, and then go one step further in terms of your posture. So now you have guys that complain about their back. Well, typically, what's the cause of that? It's a weak core. It's a weak stomach. You know, and there's so many things that they could do, and that's what we talk about during the off season is, you know, what can you do to, you know, make yourself a little healthier, a little bit more flexible, and tighten up kind of your core in those situations. So even just simple stretches, you know, in the locker room or, you know, even on the driving range, you know, putting the towel down or something like that where you take a golf club and do some simple stretches just to loosen up your back and get yourself going. So very important.
Doug, how's your course been up there right now? Finally, it's a great weather up there in the north, 86 in Philadelphia. I've seen the first pitch up there. Now, what are you telling your members out there? If it's hot and humid, drink plenty of fluids? Or just, what do you tell how they should swing right now?
You know, the course is in phenomenal shape. We had our three-day men's member guest last week, which was one of the reasons why I didn't call. I was deeply entrenched. I probably worked about 40 hours in 3 days with the tournament and just, you know, being there. We had 54 two-man teams and our member guests, and there was a lot of, you know, stuff going on, a lot of good camaraderie, and it's something that we look forward to as employees every year to, you know, kind of be a part of the family, if you will, for a couple of days. And so typically what we like to do is we set up not just for that event, but when it does really get that those dog days of summer, we set up situations where obviously there's water coolers throughout the golf course, certainly at nines or when you're done or before, you have the ability to do that. We have coolers on our cart that you could pack ice or drinks or whatever in. And sometimes I'll have my outside guys take coolers full of washcloths with a little bit of water in there so guys can kind of cool off and just wipe their face down. And we did that for a tournament at our scoreboard area so guys can just kind of cool down a little bit. So, you know, I always stress, you know, wearing the right type of clothing, whether it's a performance fabric, it helps you kind of whisk some of that moisture away because when you sweat and it lays there, that's certainly a problem. So we kind of have to have some of these really kind of innovative fabrics that allow that moisture to wick away. Some guys like to wear those bucket hats or wide-brim hats to keep some of the sun off of their ears and face. Certainly suntan lotion is always advisable. We keep that in our locker room areas for people to be able to lather up before they go out. And obviously drinking lots of water and fluids, and unfortunately guys like to drink a few beers, and that's, you know, that's a dehydration situation. So you have to be careful with some of that. But, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that you can do to, you know, kind of pay attention to those conditions as well.
Doug, you know, there's more and more people wearing the wide-brim hats, including myself, because it's so easy to get sunburn and then develop skin cancer on the top of your ears.
Absolutely. I was just going to mention that. That's probably the number one area is the top of the ears and some of those areas that you just don't pay attention to. If you wear a regular baseball cap, certainly that's better than nothing in terms of your scalp and shading your face in those situations.
But not
you know,
guys,
well, I'm a perfect example of that because I just had one taken off the top of my head. I always just wear a baseball cap, and I found that that was not the answer. I just got the cancer cut out of the top of my ear.
I did too, Don, a couple months ago, and that's why I'm now, I have a straw hat, but I'm going to get one of those that we've seen at games, you know, that the NFL, Major League Baseball, that they're selling now that are so popular.
Yeah, I got it right. I got it. After I had the operation, they said to me, look, you got to wear a hat, a wide-brimmed hat. And they're really nice. They're very soft. Well, Doug can tell you more about them than I can. No impediment at all. I mean, they're great hats.
Right. Yeah, a lot of guys, you know, even places like Bass Pro Shops and stuff like that, because, I mean, obviously fishermen are out there on the water, and they kind of got it figured out, too, in terms of lightweight kind of, you know, flexible type fabrics that don't really, it may take a little getting used to with the brim being a little wider, you know, in terms of your vision and you know, those sorts of things. But it's certainly worth it to, and I see a lot of guys in my industry from a teaching professional standpoint that are outside quite a bit, you know, down on the lesson tee, and, you know, they wear those kind of hats. Even the old school kind of either buckets or straw hats, you know, are good as well, so.
Right.
You know, Doug, you were saying that, you know, how busy you were last week. I know you were working 40 hours in 3 days.
Wow.
You know, I'm around your father-in-law. He works 3 hours in 40 days.
Probably.
How's he doing, Roger?
RG, he's doing good. He got some new fishing line today.
Did he over there fall in the lake like he did before?
Yeah. Yeah. He just goes ahead and wears his bathing suit now, I guess, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think he does. Well, all I know is, Tommy, he's told the family that was the greatest trip he ever had in his life. I'm sure went over very well with his wife.
Oh, that's fantastic up there. Doug, we have to get you down here next year for a hockey game, too. Well, let me know for that Orlando golf show. Stay here at the house so you commute back and forth up there.
Yeah, I tell you what, I haven't been to Orlando for the golf show in a number of years now. I always remember the last time I went. I don't know if you're familiar with, but we ate at a steakhouse down there called Charlie's Steakhouse, which was phenomenal. Phenomenal.
Right.
Probably a little bit on the pricey side, but somebody bought my dinner, so I thought it was even better.
Oh, that's even better up there.
Now, Doug, how far are you outside of Baltimore? What town are you actually in?
I live north and west of
Baltimore. No, I don't mean live. I mean the golf course.
Oh, the golf course is in Baltimore County, again, north and west. We're probably, I'd say, 25 minutes from downtown.
Wow.
Yeah,
Hunt Valley?
Yeah, just far enough. Yeah, Hunt Valley. We're just far enough that we hit in some of those rural areas with a lot of That Hunt Valley area that we're in, there's some horse country down through there, it's really scenic and kind of, you know, a beautiful area in terms of a lot of well-to-do individuals kind of live in that area, a lot of affluent people there, so it's very beautiful, yeah.
Well, is there an actual town, down there?
Absolutely, yeah. The town is Hunt Valley, yes.
Hunt Valley, okay.
Yes, yep.
Yeah, Hunt Valley is where the light rail goes, right?
Absolutely. You've got that correct.
Yeah, right from Camden Yards.
Has
Coach Harbaugh been out, Doug?
I'm sorry?
Has Coach Harbaugh been out to play?
I have not seen him in quite some time, actually. You know, I guess he's busy with mini camps, and I guess he has two I think he has two children. I know one of which is a pretty solid little athlete. Maybe just has one girl. He's always on the go, kind of doing something. This is the time of year that most of our members are getting out to play. And, I mean, I see B.J. Surhoff all the time. He's out there all the time. I see Rick Dempsey on occasion. Some guys are coming out, but I don't see Coach Harbaugh so much. I mean, he's more likely to come out at 7 or 8 o'clock and just have a bite to eat with his family, maybe hit a few golf balls. He kind of stays away from a lot of the high traffic times and areas. You know, certainly our members aren't the kind that are just going to, you know, walk up to him and say, you know, different things. I think they kind of know the drill in terms of, you know, the guy's a member, leave him alone kind of a situation. He's trying to get away from life, you know what I mean? So they're not going to go up to him and say, hey, Coach, how come you ran a, you know, full-back sweep, or, you know what I mean? Like that kind of – I mean, there might be a few idiots.
They leave all those questions for you to ask.
Pretty much. Pretty much. Yep.
Coach, what happened there? I can see when he's playing golf on Monday. He's here's your ball, golf balls. We should have run that play. Here's some golf balls. Go have a good time with them.
Right.
Yeah, he's, so you know B.J. Surdoff, huh, Doug?
Absolutely. In fact, I spoke with him this morning. He was there playing some golf. He's He is a wonderfully nice man.
Definitely.
You know, you got to get to know him a little bit, but once you kind of get around him, you could tell why he was such a stalwart kind of in our community and obviously in the locker room from, you know, kind of how, you know, you get guys together and they joke around, kid around and bust on each other. And he loves to kind of give me some ribbon, you know, I mean, whatever the subject is. He's the kind of guy that if you had any, whatever team it was, you'd want him on it. You know what I mean? He's just that kind of guy, you know, and there have been a couple situations where he's kind of been in and around the area where maybe a member has unjustly given me a hard time about something.
No.
And for some reason, they never bothered me again. You know what I mean? Like, took care of it kind of a situation. I think he has a deep respect for kind of a leadership role, whether it's a coach, a manager, or what my position might be, you know? You know, so he's just, like I said, he's that kind of guy. He's love to chat with him. I don't really talk to him about baseball unless he brings it up. You know what I mean? Because, you know, it's just one of those athlete kind of, you know, non-written rules that you don't really want to violate. So he's a huge North Carolina fan, obviously, you know, going to college there. In fact, this morning when I saw him, I was wearing a Carolina blue shirt. And, of course, he said to me, he goes, "You finally sported the colors, huh?" and I told him, I said, "Yeah, I have to do some laundry. I didn't have anything else clean."
He was at Carolina when my son was there.
Yeah, he's one of the,
I think he was a couple years younger. He ought to be, what is he, about 50? 51?
Well, I want to say, well, what year did Michael Jordan get drafted? 83 or 86? Hell, I don't even know what it was.
Boy,
he was in that.
I don't remember.
I would say 83.
83. I was going to say it's 83 too, yes.
Yeah, he was graduating college, I think, in that time frame, I want to say.
He was behind him then. He was behind. I thought he was he was like a freshman. I thought he was a freshman. My son was a senior, but I guess not.
Don? That's 30 years ago. You know, if Jordan graduated in 83, Jordan's got to be, 52?
Jordan was there. Oh yeah, then at that time, yeah. JD will be 55 next month.
Well, there
next
you go.
Month.
Yeah, so he could have been like a freshman when JD was like a junior or senior.
Right, that's right.
Interesting. Yeah, because Doug, next time he's talking to BJ Surdoff, just tell him that I used to cover him when he used to come play for the Brewers for Milwaukee, come to town, and Bob Gibson was the pitcher, and I know BJ was a catcher up there, and I just tell him if Tommy G said hello, we'd like to get him on when he's nice.
Oh, yeah.
Talk some baseball. Awesome. Be great to get him on.
Yeah, he...
What's he doing now, Doug?
You know, that's a really good question. I mean, I know that he and his wife, I think, both are big, you know, as far as raising money for autism. So he does, I mean, that's, if you remember, one of the years that he was in Baltimore, I think he got traded to the Atlanta Braves right around that trade deadline, and that was devastating for him because he has a son with autism that...
Oh, that's right.
You know, in the Baltimore area...
And he probably has a foundation, right? As a foundation?
Yes, he does. And I think, I want to say it's Kennedy Krieger that does a lot of stuff with autism that, you know, was integral for his son to kind of be here in Baltimore in terms of, you know, the different things that he needed to learn and to coexist, I guess, and to live his life. So that was a huge, you know, thing for him to get traded to the Braves, not just because of the baseball aspect, but he's, you know, he does a lot of stuff. He's a family guy, you know what I mean? And and he and his wife both have done an awful lot of things to raise money for autism. So, you know, again, he's a pillar of our community and in that sense of, you know, just being a part of everything, you know? So we see him when we see him. I don't know whether he still has any affiliation with the Orioles or not. I know that he's been to spring training. I know that he had he has a son that's a fabulous swimmer, I think, I want to say Texas, that actually was in some of the Olympic trial stuff. So, he goes back to North Carolina. I know that he's watched games there and done some different stuff. So, I mean, he plays golf. He goes
you get out of Doug, if you get out of North Carolina, everybody goes back. I never saw anything like it.
Yeah, well, that's what they say. They say for most places, you know, they say, where do you go to school? And people will tell you where they went to college. In Maryland, when they say, where do you go to school, everybody says, you know, it's a high school they mention. It's Calvert Hall, it's St. Joe's, it's Loyola, you know what I mean? So for whatever reason, people around here, you know, in the private school setting, tell you what high school they went to.
That's a good point that Don made because, you know, a guy that Don and I are familiar with, Al Gardner, Don,
right.
I was in Charlotte at WBT all those years, Atlanta, and you probably remember him, Tommy and Frank, when he was down in Tampa, you know, years ago. And then he went to Philly to run the station, and he and his wife moved back to Charlotte.
Okay, I remember that now because he had the station down here. Next time you see B.J. Surdoff, Tommy G said hello, because I covered him. We covered him when he was with the Brewers, and we played with Bob Gibson and –
Tommy, you covered Moses.
I feel like Moses right now. Don. Oh boy, that's a great point up there. I feel like it right now. But next time we see BJ's, tell him I said hello up there. We'd love to get him on the program because I know he played for the Brewers, and I know Bob Gibson Ray Surge pitched to him. I remember that now.
Well, didn't JD Don play at North Carolina in baseball, right?
Yeah, he went to the College World Series there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
He probably played with BJ then. 3-1 Phillies guys.
That's what I say. I thought I remember when he came to when he was going on the Olympic team, and he came to came to Veterans Stadium, and I think JD told me he was a freshman when he was a senior, but I'm not positive about that, but I think so.
Well, age wise, I think that fits.
Yeah, 55 to 51.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Huh. Okay.
But
I was up there today in Charlotte, and I'll tell you what, there's a lot to be said. And I'll tell you what, I saw a university today I'd never been by before in Rock Hill, South Carolina, right over the border. Winthrop, and I want to tell you, that is one beautiful campus.
Hmm.
And I hadn't been in Rock Hill in probably 40 years.
Wow. But
they
still got
the baseball. A lot of schools, Roger, that are, if you haven't been, you think you've been to most all the schools, and then you start to go around. And you look at me like, for instance, nobody would think of Swarthmore. Nobody would think of,
right,
you know, whatever.
Right.
And,
right.
I mean, they're wonderful, wonderful schools.
Well, you know, Wolford is where the Panthers have their practice, their training camp. I think it used to be at Furman. And I think from what I saw today on the interstate, it said Panthers training camp. And I think that's at Wolford College.
Hmm. Well, Roger, then Rock Hill had that baseball stadium out there. Is that still there?
I'll tell you, there's a lot there, Tommy. It's absolutely amazing, the historical area, and it probably is. And, you know, there's just so much. When you go between Greenville, Spartanburg, and Charlotte,
right,
you've got minor league teams, and then you've got all those colleges, Clemson and and, you know, then you go to what Winston-Salem was in, isn't that far away, and you got Wake Forest, you got the triangle at Greensboro and Raleigh.
Wake Forest got too big for Winston-Salem. They had to move down the road. their school was too big.
Wow.
Well, you know, that's amazing. I remember that. I went to Wake Forest for a long weekend, to see a friend of mine that was from Springfield. Well, matter of fact, he went to Springfield. Tommy, and he was a golfer for Joe Cannon, like you were.
Oh, was he really?
Yeah, Dick Marsh. He was a few years ahead of you, and then he transferred to Temple. And I went down there, and he and his future wife, she was in nursing school, they had some dance, and he set me up with a double date.
Uh-oh.
And I used his car, and you'll never – the guy was his fraternity brother, and the fellow that we went to the Rathskeller down in downtown Winston-Salem with these two young ladies, and it was Brian Piccolo who I was with on Saturday night.
No.
Yeah.
Oh,
played football, you know, when he was at Wake Forest and was a good friend of Dick's. And,
well, Pat Williams, he talks about Wake Forest all the time, writes Wake Forest in his books. He's a loyal Wake Forester.
Wow.
Well,
I guess
those schools, and like you said, in that area, I tell you, those schools are fantastic. My nephew went to North Carolina, and I'll tell you, he definitely bleeds North Carolina blue.
Oh, it's unbelievable. I mean, even in New York, and now the kids are in New York, I mean, it's like they're in North Carolina. They have dinners that once every week and a weekend outings, and it's unbelievable.
down in Florida, it's 90 degrees again down here, Don. It's the hottest heck down here today. But I tell you a funny story. I'm watching this Phillies game right now. I looked down on Tuesday night, showed a toast to Bill Matthews. The Philly fanatic made it down to the Trophies. He put on such a good show. I'm laughing my head off. And people say, why are you laughing at? You know, not DJ Kitty. Well, the best mascot in baseball, the Philly fanatic. And I was in the office today, and I said to Thunderbug, hey, what'd you think of the Philly fanatic? He walked away from me.
He is the best.
What's the score of the game?
3-1. Phillies got one run, but there were two long shots. Utley had one almost to the fence, and so did Howard, but they only got one run. 3-1, top of the sixth.
Well, gentlemen, Frank said tick, tick, tock. I'd like to
tell
thank
Frank, we don't care about that.
Yeah, right.
<Uh-oh>.
we want OT.
Well, fellas, it was great once again. Thanks to all the guests that were on with us, because we had a great night. Well, same with
you,
Roger, and Frank doing a great job at the controls again. And Tommy will do it again next week.
God bless you, Don.
Frank is the master. And, Don, we're looking forward to seeing you and your lovely wife next week. We're going to be up.
Is that right?
Yeah,
we'll be on Tuesday,
and we'll be there the following Wednesday. I'm going to a memorial in New York for Big Mike Davidson. You know, he used to be the morning man at WH.
Aww.
And he passed away a couple of weeks ago, and they're going to have it. His mother couldn't make it to Minneapolis, so his girlfriend is doing a wonderful thing. They're going to have a memorial at her nursing home on Roosevelt Island.
Is Rita going to come up? Is Rita going to come up with you?
Oh yeah, yeah. We're flying up on Tuesday, and that's what Rita said to me last night. When do we get together with the Hendersons, and where do we go for dinner?
Whatever day you're available, my boy. I set everything else aside.
Oh,
okay.
That's like
and
the Pope coming in town.
Because I sent him a card, and last week it was his 80th birthday. We didn't really acknowledge it like we should. He's a special
Goodbye.
Guy.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
Happy birthday.
Have a great
to
week,
you.
Everybody. God bless. Frank, you're the man.
God bless you, Don. Roger, thanks for coming. I'd like to thank a Philadelphia legend, the birthday boy, Mr. Don Henderson, for coming on. Orlando legend, Roger Henderson, for coming on. Head coach of the Tampa Bay Storm, Lawrence Samus. Our mystery guest this week was former Storm quarterback, now associate coach with this Tampa Bay Storm, Shane Stafford. Bill Matthews, the head coach of Eckerd College. And, Frank, what can I say? What a fantastic show again. And I'd like to thank Bradford White Water here once again. Purchase your water, log on to bradfordwhite.com. Tampa Bay Golf and Country, give Tim Baker a call. He won't call us, 352-588-5454. But he did have a baby girl, Frank. You want me to tell him that? And the Abbey course, give Tom a call, 352-588-2016. Frank, let me know for the weekend. We'd love to come down and join you guys for brunch or dinner. So let us know. And, Frank, take it away, sir.
Okay, Tommy, we want to thank all our fans for listening. We especially want to thank the members. These programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation of the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women of Police and Fire Services. When you're out there, you see someone in uniform, just say thank you. It means a world of good to all of us. These programs are also dedicated to those who have lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Tolcat, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Servant, New Castle County Police, Patrolman Arnolfo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogue, Longwood Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol. Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol. Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy of the Plymouth Township Police Department. Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department. Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department. MIT Officer Sean Collier. Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office. Deputy Jonathan Scott Payne, Orange County Sheriff's Office. Officer Robert Germain, the Windermere, Florida Police Department. Florida Highway Patrolman Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, sometime we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the rose rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields, and the sunshine light slightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hollow of his hand. Good night. God bless.
Shemalek ma'ilama, shemahezahilma, sona shenevoratfet, hakuig again ma'ilama. Saw him go, I will free me. fiery blade engaged to lead, he'd break the bravest in the field. Prowess and strength and length of days.
We love you.